Mr. Cooklett.
Okay, please, the court. I'd like to first address a couple of the points that were raised this morning. First had to do with the timing of the litigation. Decision regarding the developer's agreement that was made by Judge R. in Hudson County was made prior to the introduction of these flood ordinances. That was in June of 2013. The second decision was made by Judge Rodriguez, where she found automatic approval as of the date of the denial of the refusal to have a hearing. And then after that, the flood ordinances were brought before the court on a motion for reconsideration, which Judge Rodriguez denied. Judge Rodriguez rejected the health and safety defense to automatic approval, which is almost exactly the issue that is now here on this petition. The appellate division affirmed her ruling, and this court denied cert when these very issues were presented to you in about 2 years ago. So that's the history of how we got to this point. Now, this is a platform that was used in the Bethlehem steel shipbuilding industry in Hoboken, you know, going back 100 years. It runs north and south. It's rectangular. It's supported by about 2,800 timber piles. And then there's a platform, there's earth, concrete. So that's the structure that's there. DEP has a policy to encourage people to reuse platforms like this. Now, this doesn't run east and west, as most of us think of these features. This runs north and south, so it runs right along the shoreline. It's 100 feet from the shoreline at its nearest point. So that's what we're dealing with, and it's 100 feet from the T building, which is a major 12-story building that has 500 some odd units that is immediately to the west. So we're due east of the T building. Now, what is the plan? The plan is to, approved by DEP, is to take out the whole existing platform and to replace it with a new concrete steel supported pile platform. So about 800 piles will be put in. And the important point is it will raise the first floor elevation of this structure to 22 feet. Now, why is that important? Because that design has led FEMA to say that if you do that, if you build it that way, we will move you from a high-risk flood area to a flood area where you only get one flood every 500 years. So that's exceedingly important. And how does that relate to the rest of Hoboken? Well, the T building is about 11. We're going to be about 22. I'm just saying that this flood risk here that's being, you know, it's exaggerated. Maybe I'm being too kind. It's really made up. There is not a flood risk with respect to this building. It's going to be built at a very high elevation in such a way that it'll be one of the most secure buildings, if not the most secure in Hoboken. And that's why FEMA issued the letter that they did. The DEP issued a permit, which they have extended several times over the years as this litigation has dragged on. And the Corps of Engineers has issued a permit for this property. So, and that was really the reasons why Judge Rodriguez rejected this in the first place, because of all the other agency scrutiny here involving the project. So that's where we are. The whole idea of a health and safety exception, I think really ought to be thought seriously about, because in all my years of doing land use law, I've never come across a health and safety exception. They don't spring out of nowhere. All of these issues are well understood issues regarding land development. New Jersey has a very highly regulated land use business, so that there's nothing new under the sun. So the possibility to use a health and safety exception, if found here, for mischief, for creating uncertainty in the land use field is much greater than any protection of health and safety that might be derived from allowing this exception.
What if there were, I'm sorry, Chief, go ahead. I'm sorry. What if there were a catastrophic event, an earthquake? You're the expert on this. I'm not. I don't know what kind of catastrophic events could undermine the integrity of the platform or the building. But let's just assume for the purpose of the question there was, after final approval.
Well, that could be of any building, I guess.
Theoretically. Is it your position that there is nothing that Hoboken can do to stop this building from being constructed, even if at this point FEMA, the DEP, experts in the field all say that this is unsafe for habitation?
That's a hypothetical I can't even imagine. I guess if something like that happened, the builder wouldn't be able to build because he wouldn't get financing to do it, or he wouldn't get insurance to do it. But
are you saying, in essence, let's just say that the builder is not worried about those things. You saying that if, in fact, a building was rendered unsafe by an event that took place after final approval, that everybody has to just sit back and say it goes up?
That's a different situation.
It's a hypothetical, but it illustrates...
Are you talking about an existing building or a new building?
Building that is about to be built, and the integrity of the ground or the platform or whatever it may be that it is going to be built on is compromised by an earthquake.
No, because in that instance, you wouldn't get a building permit because there's more approvals than the ones that we've described that have to do with certain aspects and of course site plan. But the next step in a process of building a building is to get a construction permit. And in Hoboken, in fact, and this does not come out clear in the papers, there is already a flood ordinance. So this is not something new, it's just
the city would be within its rights to deny a building permit in that situation.
If a building didn't conform to the building code, yes.
I'm not saying that it doesn't conform. The plans have already been reviewed. But if a natural event rendered the development unsafe and representing a major change since what happened before final approval, what recourse does the town have? Does it have to simply step back and say, go ahead and build, we gave the final approval?
No, because Justice, your question assumes a circumstance where someone would have to go in and get a building permit, and that they couldn't get a building permit if...
Okay, so can the town then say,
yes,
forget final approval, there's a safety element to this that was unanticipated, you do not get the building permit.
A building permit is a totally separate approval under the state building code.
Okay, that's the answer then.
And in this case, Hoboken has a flood ordinance that regulates similar things to this ordinance. But what Hoboken did, I mean, they changed the regulatory official from the construction code official who reports to DCA and whose decisions are appealed to the County Board of Construction Appeals, they change that to the zoning officer who reports to the mayor.
I had a similar question. Suppose the very best of motives on the part of the municipality. Could Hoboken, out of a concern, legitimate concern for flooding and health and safety, pass an ordinance that wouldn't rub up against the MLUL in this situation?
I don't think so, because I think that the MLUL is written broadly. It covers all rights of the developer that he has in final approval, and so I don't think that Hoboken could pass an ordinance that would be regulatory as to the developer's rights to build outside of the MLUL. If that's your question. I don't think they could do by regulatory step what they can't do by enforcement of their zoning ordinance.
No, I want to be clear that I've understood you correctly in response to your questions to Justice Patterson. Are you admitting that if there were a singular idiosyncratic event that occurred post-final approval that rendered construction of the building unsafe, the construction official could deny a building permit based upon public safety?
Yes, the state building code is, the whole purpose of the state building code is safety. And it's a totally different process than the site plan.
Okay, so what you're telling Hoboken is, you know, you still haven't, if you still have these concerns and consider them legitimate, here is an avenue for appeal. Take your appeal to the building official.
Right, and I'm also saying that there is a existing flood ordinance that we comply with, and when we get the right, because right now we don't have the right to make a submission because the Hoboken ordinance here barred any development below the mean high water line, barred development on piers, barred use of fill. Turned it over to the planning board, created a special exception for those who have 10,000 square feet of less. That happens not to be us. And there's a whole plethora of provisions in that ordinance that are clearly directed at one party, and I think they probably would admit that, but they are all land use restrictions that are in that ordinance that make it impossible to proceed until that ordinance is resolved. So now, while we talked about the mayhem that could happen with, you know, the mischief that could happen if you created this housing safety exemption, which would be much, I think, more problematic than the few instances, maybe none, that you would ever really have a health and safety exemption. I'd like to just talk about the statute for a minute. The statutes, the three statutes, are symmetrical. You can do a health and safety exemption while the application is pending before a preliminary is granted. Then if you go for preliminary before final, there can be a health and safety ordinance adopted. But I think the appellate division got it right when it said that it would be modifying but not destroying a project. So the language of the preliminary health and safety exemption is certainly different than, or is certainly qualified as to what it could get at. But clearly, as Justice Alvin said, 52 gives rights to the developer for 2 years that his project won't be disturbed. And without that protection, building would be impossible because you'd be again subject to a whole new set of ordinances and regulations. And I don't think that is the intent of either the court's decisions or the legislative enactments. The TOA was enacted really to provide a level of certainty as to what the zoning was when the TOA was enacted. And that's what the sponsor's statement indicated. Here you have, you know, the court's recognition in the Dunbar case of the need to have certainty. Justice Solomon, I think that was your decision. You pointed that out.
It was all our decision.
What?
It was all of our decision.
Okay. Well, you wrote it. But and there's other cases that maybe are by analogy we can consider, like the Pizzomanton case, a very famous Supreme Court case that said to municipalities, you may not like a project, you may think it's bad, but you can't turn it down unless your reasons for it being bad are in an ordinance. So you have to act by ordinance. So it provided a certain structure, a certain method of thought here with respect to how things get approved. But what you're being asked to do here is to create an exception out of spirit. That's what the argument is. Apply the spirit of the law, not the letter of the law. But that's not what you've said in your land use cases, either in Dunbar or in Pizzomanton or in others. You've required that there be a structure. So I think that ought to be considered. Also, the principle of omission. In the Jackson case involving dedication of property, the court's holding was based on the fact that, you know, that in PUDs, the legislature has said you can have, you can require the dedication of land, but not in other instances under the municipal land use law. And that that omission or that comparison was the key to the holding in that case. Just as here, I mean, clearly, the plain language of 52 has no health and safety exemption, and I think to apply one would be a mistaken exercise of
authority. Can you address the argument that the exception in Section 49 is incorporated in 52?
Section 49 versus 52, you know, is sort of goes on the assumption that people proceed through 49, get a preliminary, and then go to a final. That's not how the world works. Maybe it worked that way 140 years ago. The requirements for a land use application to be complete are stringent, and they're the same in most instances for preliminary and final. So applicants invariably seek preliminary and final approval, just as we did here. I think that the statute read sensibly, it conveys a right to the developer. And the right to the developer is that his approvals will not be disturbed during that 2-year period. And in this case, there was no ordinance adopted between preliminary and final. They occurred simultaneously. So there can't be any instance here where that kind of thinking could be applied to the situation.
You said simultaneously. In terms of the timing, did the ordinances occur post-final approval or pre-final approval?
Post. Okay. The ordinance occurred post-final approval. Judge Rodriguez determined that she rendered a decision on a date after, but she said the final approval is as of the date that the time period ran out for acting on the application. And that was her specific holding, which was upheld by the appellate division.
Anything you'd like to add?
No, nothing more.
Thank you. Okay. Mr. Washburn.
Afternoon, Your Honors. I'd like to clarify one aspect of the argument, which is the references to New Jersey Shore Builders Association versus Township of Jackson. There are actually two cases with that name. They were decided about 4 months apart by this court. They are denominated in my brief as Jackson 1 and Jackson 2 to try to make a distinction. And what I'd like to focus on, the Jackson 2 case, which I think the township relies upon, is the case involving tree removal. The Jackson 1 case was the case that Mr. Coakley just referred to that involves reservation requirements for open space in all developments that was enacted in ordinances in both Jackson Township and Egg Harbor Township. And the argument that was advanced, there were two arguments advanced by the townships in that case that are relevant to the issues before you and which were decided by this court. One of them was that under the general provisions of the MLUL, predominantly Section 2C and 2G, part of the purpose of the MLUL is preservation of open space. So the townships said, well, we have a right to require open space in all developments because that's one of the statutory purposes. And your opinion said, well, not true, because you can't base a substantive provision in the statute on the general purposes requirement, that you have to have specific enacting, authorizing legislation to require reservation of open space. It can't be based on simply the purposes, the general purposes of the land use law. And that's also the holding that Mr. Coakley just referenced in the Pizzo-Manton case. That said the same thing. What the court said in Jackson 1 was that you had to have a specific provision authorizing open space in all developments. You couldn't imply it in all developments. The second relevant issue in Jackson 1, which I think was raised by the Fund for a Better Waterfront, they're arguing that that the court should imply a health and safety exception into Section 52A. The argument that was made in Jackson 1 by the two municipalities was that the court should imply an open space reservation authority into the entire land use law relative and covering all developments. This opinion, this court held that under the plain wording of the statute, that since the statute provided for open space set asides in planned unit developments and did not in other forms of approvals, that you couldn't just imply that open space requirement to from one section into the other sections. So the lesson I get from that, which is relevant here, is that omission is critical in determining legislative intent. When it's in one place and not another, you can't just graft it on to the other. And that's what the Jackson 1 case held. I just want to make one other point, which is whether Section 263 of the Hoboken Ordinance is a land use ordinance. From the builder's point of view, nothing could be clearer under the municipal land use law than that flood prevention is a land use control. Under the general purposes of the MLUL Section 2B, one of the purposes is to secure safety from flood. Under MLUL Sections 38B6 and 65E, those sections specifically authorize regulation of land subject to flooding. In fact, Section 38 of the land use law mandates municipal flood control regulation. That section states that subdivision and site plan ordinances shall regulate land subject to flooding. In addition, municipal land use law sections 93 to 99 mandate municipal stormwater regulation. And these sections were upheld in that respect in Turner versus Spico, and in the unreported opinion in S100 Investors. Both are cited on page 15 of my brief. So I think that the reliance on Jackson 1 for the idea that you can impose a general police power ordinance on a development, that's inapposite. Here, in Jackson 1, the tree replacement ordinance didn't apply only to new development. It applied to everyone in Jackson Township. So if I had a wooded back, if I'm a homeowner and I have a wooded backyard and I want my kids to be able to play soccer and I wanted to cut down all the trees, that's not land development, but that was covered by the ordinance. In the instant case, both ordinance 263 and 264 create zones, they're flood zones, and regulate development in those zones. And under sections 62A and 65 of the land use law, that is exactly what zoning does, creates zones and regulates property within the zone. So I think it's pretty clear that both of these ordinances are land use ordinances. And section, as I mentioned, section 65E and section 38B6 specifically authorize and require municipalities to designate and regulate areas subject to flooding, which is exactly what Hoboken did. So for those reasons, and plus I had stressed in our brief the obvious negative effect on my client, which represents builders and developers in the state. You know, we come in for with an application. We get it. We have vested rights, subject to a health and safety exception. We progress to the next stage for preliminary approval. We have vested rights, subject to a health and safety exception. We progress to the final point of final approval. We now have something. We know we have something. We've already spent a ton of time, money, and effort getting to that point. We now need to get financing, building permits, start site improvement, start construction. And the that's why the legislature made final approvals, in a sense, non-revocable, made the vested rights firm so that my clients, the members of my association, know they're finished and they can proceed with their development.
Thank you, Council.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Miller, brief rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I want to first to pick up on a line of questioning that dealt with the building code. And it struck me as I was listening to that exchange that at every step of this litigation, either the respondents and ultimately the courts have assured that there is some other backstop to the public health and safety issue here. When we were before Judge Rodriguez and the flood ordinances were raised, Judge Rodriguez says, I'm not going to get into that. The regulatory process is still unfolding. It may be that the ordinances prevent this development. It's an issue I'm not going to address. I'm not going to recognize, I don't need to get into that. In our appeal to DEP, we raised the issue of public health and safety. We said to DEP, you issued your permit in 2011. Hurricane Sandy happened in 2012. Your own regulations now, because of the shift in the flood zone, prohibit this very development. DEP rebuffed that request in a footnote simply stating the permit was issued in 2011, Hurricane Sandy happened in 2012. In the appellate division, the same sort of theme came up again. The court doesn't need to worry about this because there's the ordinances. Well, now here we are. And now we're talking about the building code. What's the backstop? There was the conversation about the building code was a general conversation. I didn't hear a specific.
You don't like this kicking the can down the road?
Absolutely. Every step of the way, there's been sort of a vague, nebulous, some other backstop.
Well, you have your adversary saying you have a backstop. Do you not recognize that as a potential backstop?
If my adversary would be willing to waive any argument that the building code could be enforced to stop the project?
No. What your adversary is saying is that you can challenge the issuance of a permit based on public safety. What he won't concede is that there is a legitimate public safety issue,
which is not an issue before this court. That at this stage, on this appeal, the city's determination by ordinance that this project is unsafe is entitled to a presumption of validity. The lower courts in this case did not decide that the city's ordinance, that the public safety issue was unfounded or insubstantial, or that any of these other government agencies' decisions rendered it unreasonable.
Well, your adversary is saying is that the sky will not fall if we don't weed in to the statute this public safety exception. Your adversary is saying you still have that before there's construction. Well, like, why isn't that legitimate?
I know you
disagree with the interpretation of 52A from your client. But do you agree with your adversary that the officials in Hoboken, the building officials, can deny a construction permit if constructing the building will raise legitimate public safety concerns?
My understanding, first of all, the building code has never been a focus of this case. my understanding of the building code is that it is a relatively ministerial function that's largely based on whether there's been planning approval. The building code gets more into the methods of the construction. It doesn't, my understanding is that the building code does not provide an opportunity to say, this is probably in a flood area. You can't build the project here.
You're telling us not to rely on that, to focus on the issues on this appeal. Is there anything else you'd like to rebut on the merits then?
Yes. I would like to say that Jackson, I sort of got lost in the Jackson 1, 2, which case was which, but there is a Jackson case that was referred to by the New Jersey Builders Association in their brief, which I believe Mr. Washburn was discussing, which is irrelevant. That case dealt with whether a municipality is authorized by the general purposes section of the municipal land use law to adopt an ordinance requiring a dedication of open space. Not an issue here. With the authority of the city to adopt these ordinances is not before the court.
I understood that argument to be that the court had rejected an analogous argument in a different statutory setting, that the general purpose of the statute does not graft that purpose into every provision. I thought that was the nature of the argument that amicus made.
Yeah, I understand that point. I mean, my reading of the case is that is as I stated, but there's also the principle that the statute has to be interpreted in a manner that's consistent with the general purpose, I won't rehash that argument. It's an argument that I made earlier. I think the final point that I want to make is, what is the city of Hoboken left to do in this particular case? Regardless of future hypothetical cases, no governmental agency has substantively addressed this specific public health and safety issue on the merits. We talked about the 2016 letter from FEMA. In that letter, and this goes back to the distinction between insurance and guiding municipalities in regulating development. FEMA says in that letter, and this is at Defendant's Appendix 1493, that FEMA is considering the information submitted by Shipyard relative to the 2006 flood map. It's 2020. FEMA also says, we will not be commenting on the impact of this letter that we're referring to on the preliminary maps that have subsequently been issued. All of those maps show this site in the V-zone. DEP rebuffed the city's request in a footnote. We've heard a general discussion about the building code, and I can see it now. If that is the position that the building code can stop this project.
Let's go beyond the building code. Okay.
Okay.
This is rebuttal. Let's try it. Right. Bring it home.
Right. This is not an abstract health and safety threat. The record adequately supports the city's concerns, and those concerns are in line with the guidance of the state and federal governments. And so we're prevailing upon the court to reverse in the interest of justice and in the interest of public health and safety.
Thank you. Thank you to all counsel for the fine arguments. We'll take the matter under advisement. Court's in recess.